Hi, I'm Jeff Kazerman, Vice President of Government Relations at the New Jersey Society of CBAs, and welcome to Episode 6 of the Issues Watch podcast. Today, we had the chance to interview Mark Pfeiffer. Mark is the Assistant Director of the Blaustein Local Government Research Center at Rutgers University. Before that, Mark worked for the New Jersey Division of Local Government Services, where he served as deputy director for 14 years. So we're talking about somebody who really understands local government and property taxes and what drives property taxes up and how local government works. This episode is a little bit longer than usual, but I think you'll enjoy it and find it very informative. And here's my interview with Mark. Good morning, Mark. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm really happy to be here.
Let's get right into it. New Jersey has the highest property tax in the nation, or if not the highest, close to it. And New Jerseyans have been complaining about it for decades. What are the main reasons why they're so high? I mean, I hear people complaining all the time that they're high, but can you tell us why?
Well, actually, they've been complaining about property taxes for about 150 years. It goes back generations on how we deal with raising government money to pay for government services in the state. And there have been studies over all of those years trying to figure out how we solve the problem. And it's very hard to solve a problem that's hard to define. So part of the problem is we have high property taxes because we've chosen to fund local governments, and that's our municipalities, counties, and schools, primarily through property taxes. When you layer on the fact that New Jersey, because of its location between two primary metropolitan areas, we have a high cost of living, which is driven by that location where a lot of people want to live, our density. We're the most densely populated state in the country, and we're 20% higher than number two and 40% higher than number three. So we also have a public expectation for high K-12 educational quality. We've been known for decades as having that, and that costs money. You're paying for teachers, you're paying facilities, you're paying for technology, particularly in recent years. We have a high level of expectation that our kids that go to school, particularly in suburban areas of the state, of a high educational quality. That is offset, in a way, by equally higher costs in our urban areas because urban education is very expensive. We have a lot of low and moderate income families there and kids who don't have the same lifestyle and opportunities as suburban kids do. And so there's a lot of remedial and supplemental and added costs that we have in urban school districts. And finally, another big piece of it is that we have years and years of political and public policy decisions that have resulted in higher than comparable states' employee costs. And that's an issue as well. Mm. And I think I'd finally wrap it up with the expectations of high levels of services that the public has. They expect their local governments and schools and counties to provide a wide range of services. And we also have an infrastructure problem. We have probably the country's oldest infrastructure when it comes to water, wastewater, and roads and bridges, and those things are starting to wear out, as most people know at this point. And we're going to need to invest more in upgrading those facilities.
Okay. By the way, do the local communities, do they partially fund the infrastructure changes?
It depends on the municipality, but particularly our urban municipalities where you've got water systems and wastewater systems and local roads and bridges. Those are all funded by local governments and counties. We do get some state aid on the transportation side these days through the Transportation Trust Fund. But everything else comes from either taxes or fees that residents and businesses have to pay.
Interesting. Very interesting. So for decades, or I think you said almost 150 years, New Jerseyans have been complaining rather loudly about our high property taxes. So I assume part of the reason why nothing significant has ever been done about that is because of political constraints.
I think it may be more than that. It's things have been done over the years. All right, we can't deny that. Where example in the late 1970s, where we found that funding public schools primarily through property taxes was unconstitutional because it didn't provide kids in urban districts an education similar to what kids were getting in suburban districts. We implemented an income tax, which was used for property tax relief and primarily used to provide aid to public schools to reduce property taxes. And that did work. There was no question about that. It bent the curve and lowered property taxes in those years. But if we expect that taxes will never go up, right, that doesn't get us anywhere, because the only thing that will permit rising costs to be covered when you are relying on property taxes is economic growth and growth in property values, which means new homes, new businesses, new office buildings, factories. Those things in a municipality enable additional spending without raising or hopefully lowering property taxes. That is what we've been relying on, and when we don't have that, taxes are going to go up.
In a perfect world, what could be done in New Jersey to lower property taxes?
I suppose since we don't get a perfect world, but it would be an economy that grows faster than cost increases. Right, so when you've got increasing property values and more people paying property taxes, you can afford to provide services at equal or lower levels, right, and increase spending to a point where, as long as you're not increasing the tax rate, you're doing fine. But that's a very unusual set of circumstances to happen. It did happen in New Jersey in the mid to late 1980s, where we had a lot of growth. We had a lot of job creation, and people were moving in. We were building homes. They were buying appliances. They were buying cars and pumping money into the economy. And property taxes in those days were doing fairly well. Those days are long past us, where we haven't had the same type of growth and where expenses haven't gone up at the same rate or faster than that growth. So that's a problem. We also probably need to do more work to bring employee costs more into line with what's happening in the economy generally. In the private sector, employment practices have changed radically over the last 40 years or so when it comes to pensions and health benefits, and some would argue not for the better. But public sector employment has generally remained consistent with where it was. In the early 2010-2011 timeframe, we made some significant changes where all public employees started to pay a percentage of their employee health care costs. That was a big change, and it was something that was common in the private sector for a number of years when we made that change. So we also have challenges with public pensions, not because pensions are necessarily excessive, although some can argue that they are, but because of the way the state didn't fund parts of the pension program over the last 15 years.
Let's talk about something that comes up a lot, and that is, at least in most people's minds, part of the property tax issue. And that's the issue of municipal and school district consolidation. New Jerseyans are always talking about how we have far too many municipalities and school districts. They say typically that if we had consolidation of these entities, we'd save a significant amount of money and we'd have lower property taxes. So my first question is whether that perception is true.
So I would argue that it's not, particularly for municipalities. Based on a study that a colleague and I did a couple of years ago, where we looked at per capita costs of municipalities based on their size. And we found that smaller municipalities tended to have lower per capita costs than larger ones. Larger ones spent more money per capita. We figured that was for a couple of reasons. There was no one predominant reason, but we realized that some of those reasons were the fact that when you had a larger property tax base and higher values, you tended to spend more money. We also found that smaller municipalities tend to focus on being efficient in the services that they offer, and larger places focus on providing a wider range of services, in part because larger communities have a more diverse population, and diverse populations want different services. Smaller municipalities tend to have similar populations and needs, and will then offer fewer services. In part, and that also relates to the fact that if you're a smaller place, you don't have that big a property tax base, so you're not going to spend all that much. So those types of things tend to play into account, and we realize that if you try to consolidate your way into property tax savings, you're really not, because larger places cost more to operate. You spend more money on employees, you have more professionals, more legal issues, all that stuff tends to add up.
And with school district consolidation, I believe I've heard you say in the past that that can be more successful regarding savings. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, I think in part. There's been some studies in the past that show if you do consolidate schools together to make very large districts, costs will go up. There's been some national research to find what is the sweet spot of where you can provide a wide range of educational services to students and not get bogged down in a lot of administrative and management overhead. So there's probably a sweet spot there, and I think that there was maybe a population of about 90,000 people and the relative relationship of students to that. But what we found in Jersey is that we do have a lot of school districts, and we have some 300 districts that are not single kindergarten through 12th grade districts. And those present an interesting set of challenges, right, in that those are smaller districts. They're K-6s, K-8s, and maybe in some cases K through 4. But those districts do not necessarily, in all cases, align their curriculum with the high school district the kids are going to go to. Educators call that articulation. And when you don't have good articulation, you have students coming into high school from different smaller districts that have had different educational services and different standards and different textbooks. And it's very hard then for those high school districts to get those students working on the same page because they have different skills and different backgrounds. There's been some work done that shows that when you have those K-8 type systems that are aligned with using the same curriculum, so when all the kids get into high school, they've been exposed to the same things, educational quality goes up. So one of the things we've been talking about is an effort to get all those school districts either consolidated or in some way getting their curriculum and services aligned, so that kids that are going into the same high school all have the same types of educational background. That may save some money. It may not in other cases. In some cases, if you close some local schools, you may incur additional busing costs. You have differences in values of property values in municipalities that if you consolidate, taxes may go up in some towns, and that's not going to be acceptable to anybody there. So we need to get creative in finding some ways to get school districts aligned, and if savings come from that, that's going to be an added bonus.
So school consolidation or school district consolidation is not necessarily going to provide any cost savings, but it will likely make for a better educational experience.
Yes. The evidence has shown that if you go in that direction, that's the effect it will have. I should also point out that in some cases in New Jersey, with 565 municipalities and some 590 school districts, there are some cases where full consolidation makes sense and can result in lower costs. But those places aren't around a lot. I mean, in the last 60 years, we've had one real municipal consolidation, and that was Princeton Borough and Princeton Township. But those two places had already been sharing a board of education. They had a regional board. They had a regional library. they had a number of regional programs that they were already doing, and they were effectively one community. And when you really have one community, consolidation in those cases probably makes a lot of sense. And the same on the school side as well.
Right. Let me ask you something that has always baffled me. If New Jerseyans are so in favor of consolidation, how come it never seems to happen, or almost never seems to happen?
Well, I think it's because when it comes down to that old saying, don't tax me, don't tax you, don't tax me, tax the guy behind the tree. It's that consolidation will really work in other places.
Don't mess with my town. Right.
My town is fine the way it is.
I got it. So it's good for the other guy probably, but don't do it to me.
Right. And even, you know, and if it might work for me, it may be one of those places where, yes, it may work. But you also have people who look at those municipal boundary lines that have been drawn over the years, and they came up for all kinds of different ways, and many of them were not ways that we would be proud of. They could have been a result of corruption, racial discrimination, just outright greed in some cases. But those boundary lines often represent community to people. And community is what's important to folks, and that's what those lines represent. It represents, you know, where they live, where they work, where they go to religious, where they go for religious purposes. All kinds of different relationships go in, and people don't necessarily want that disrupted by bringing in all of a sudden another town as part of that. And that's a real thing for a lot of people. But in those cases where the towns are very similar, like in the Princetons, right, you have those types of opportunities, if not for full consolidation, where the local governments can start sharing services, where you might be able to share a police department, consolidate that together, right, or do other services. And so shared services is becoming a way that we're looking at more and more, where municipalities can save money by working together.
Okay, let me ask you one last question, and then we'll wrap it up. Taking into account all the political realities facing potential property tax reform measures and, you know, the attitudes like you were just talking about, consolidate the other guy, but don't consolidate my town. Taking all that into account, and also taking into account what would really have an impact, what reforms do you think the state and local governments should try and pass over the next few years to reduce property taxes? I mean, what is possible?
Well, I think reducing property taxes is really hard to do. However, we really have some opportunities to bend that cost curve, to flatten out the rate of increases, or maybe get them at a constant level as much as possible. So I think in those areas, we need to look at employee benefit costs. That is shown to be an ongoing issue that just keeps going up every year, and those cost increases often exceed the amount of increase that municipalities are allowed to put on their property taxpayers. You have to remember, we currently have property tax levy and appropriation caps that limit how much more money a municipality can spend every year. But that still is at its spending. So employee costs are one area. I think governments can look more at service delivery options, looking at shared services, looking at contracting with the private sector or nonprofit organizations to see where they can get equivalent services or better services at lower prices. And also we need to look at some big picture issues, or some long-term government practices, things we've been doing for generations where systems were set up maybe 40, 50, or 60 years ago that may have outlived their usefulness, or the problems they were intended to solve have been solved and new problems have taken their places. Technology can be a big enabler on that as well, and we need to start looking at those areas to see what can be done there. And I think finally, and we've kind of alluded to it, is that the public doesn't always understand how their local governments work. And I think so, helping the public understand that effort, that problem, would make things a little bit better and help people understand, here's why property taxes are the way they are, or at least explain to them how that works.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the society, in conjunction with a few other groups, put together a property tax guide that I believe you wrote. And I think that would be helpful for our members to read.
And yes, that's absolutely right. I think the guide can be very helpful to people. It's also available online, and there's a website for it, which is njpropertytaxguide.com.
Great, great. So we thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure, Jeff. I'm glad I can help out.
Thank you. That's it for today's episode. I hope you found it interesting and informative. One more time, I just want to thank Mark for coming on our show. I found what he had to say extremely insightful. If you like the Issues Watch podcast, you can subscribe for free on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to take a little break for the holidays, so we'll be back in 4 weeks, and I hope you enjoy your holidays. Thanks for listening.